Welcome back to the Children's Hour. We're talking with Peter McCoy. He is the founder of Mycologos, which is the world's first school of mycology, or about mushrooms and fungus. And he's here with us on the line from Portland, Oregon. And lots more questions from our kids' crew about mushrooms.
Is there a difference between mushrooms and fungi?
Fungi, or fungi, just depending how you want to say, like tomato or tomato kind of thing. It's a giant category. The fungal kingdom, as they say, has anywhere from 1.5 to up to 6 million species. And the average estimate, the current estimate, is around 2.3 million. And with plants, we think there's only 300,000. So there's many times more fungi in the world than plants. The majority of those fungi are molds. And so they just live as this network of tissue, just like the molds on your food that go bad, or molds you might see in the soil or growing on trees and things. The mushrooms are just a small category of all fungi. So mushrooms, they also produce this network of tissue, mycelium, but then they are sort of more complex, and they produce the big mushroom that we see, this sort of three-dimensional structure that we can pick and we can eat. But that mushroom that would grow off of, say, this grow bag, that's kind of like the apple on the tree. You know, really the tree is, the majority of it is the branches, the leaves, the roots. That's really what the tree is. And the apple is just the short-lived fruit that we can eat as humans. Same thing here. So really, I like to think of all fungi as the majority are this mycelium. The mycelium does all the interesting work in the environment. The mushrooms we see and we like to engage with, they're just a small piece of that. And a very small percentage of all fungi produce mushrooms.
How many kinds of fungi are there?
Roughly, let's say 2.3 million species. So there's a lot of species out there. And then the different ways we talk about them or categorize them kind of depends on who you're talking to. I like to think of it in more simple terms as just sort of the fungi we can see they're mushrooms of. Like I say, the apple on the tree, the way that they reproduce. And then there's the micro fungi, the small fungi that we can maybe see their mycelium, but we can't actually easily see the way that they reproduce. Fungi produce spores. It's like a plant seed, but different in a lot of ways. And the molds, we can't really see that easily. We can't see that up close. We can see the color. When the mold on your orange or your bread in your fridge goes bad and turns green, that green is actually the color of the spores. The mycelium right below that is usually white or gray. And so we can see that, but we can't really see it up close. We can't really see the structure. Under a microscope, it looks like a tree. So these are two really different ways, what's easy to see and what's not so easy to see up close. And that's one way to think about it. Another category are the yeast. And the yeast are what make our beer and bread and wine and fermented drinks, maybe kombucha, if you're familiar with that, and other fermented beverages that aren't necessarily alcoholic. There's these single-celled fungi. These are the smaller percentage that don't form a network of tissue. They just live as single little cells that float through the liquid and do fermentation. So that's another category of what I would call microfungi, because we can't see them individually, but we can see their effect and how they turn, you know, sugar water into kombucha or something. You know, beyond that, a very different way to talk about them or sort them out is thinking about their roles in the environment. And that's when it gets, for me, really fascinating, really important, and, you know, but also as sort of fine-tuned as you can, as you want to get into. But it just is ways thinking about how they grow and what they look like. We have the mushrooms and the molds and yeast.
What kind of places can you find mushrooms? Do they just exist everywhere?
Fungi, you know, just all the fungi, they seem to live essentially everywhere. The mushrooms as a smaller group of fungi are only in so many places. They can't necessarily grow everywhere. So if we're thinking about fungi, molds, just mycelium again in general, that's actually found pretty much everywhere they've looked. The bottom of the ocean, they actually think that the entire ocean floor might be filled and growing through with mycelium, just as we find in the forest.
What? Wait, what?
Yeah.
In the bottom of the ocean, like where all the sand is?
Yeah, and that's how they think that when the sea creatures die, they fall and the fungi decompose them and recycle the nutrients, just like they do in the forest and in the fields in our backyard and stuff. That's the same role that fungi do on land. They do at the bottom of the ocean. And it's a pretty big idea. They also are floating throughout the ocean, so they've sampled it and they find especially yeast and these single-celled fungi floating all throughout the oceans, different types. And then on the land, we find, you know, pretty much everywhere in the Sahara deserts, so the driest places of the world, we can sample the sand and there's fungi living there, especially if there's maybe some plants nearby that they're relating with and being partners with and friends with. And yeah, tops of the mountains, I mean, pretty much every environment, there's going to be fungi doing these roles of cycling nutrients. You know, really without them, nothing else can live, because they kickstart and they start the cycle of nutrients that is essential to life.
You said earlier that fungi have been around longer than any other living thing on our planet. Where do you think they came from?
They came after bacteria. So they thought as bacteria came first, but then fungi were more complex, bigger, more interesting cells, were able to do more things. The standard thought evolution theory is that the bacteria just, you know, through mutation got more complex. You know, we don't really know. There's this really interesting idea that's been proposed that it's possible that in the early Earth, a meteor could have crashed on Earth and actually seeded life here. Of course, you'd wonder where that life came from elsewhere, but there's actually been scientific research showing that this is not impossible. They've simulated meteor crashes, and lichens and molds and mushroom spores, fungal spores, are able to survive those simulated impacts. So that could have happened. They've even put lichens and molds and spores out into space. They take them up to the space station, put it out into space for several weeks, and then they bring them back inside and they're totally fine. They don't get hurt. The cold, the lack of air doesn't affect them. So they could survive maybe forever floating through space and then suddenly crash on Earth a long time ago and seed the planet. With lichens, that's almost the most interesting, because a lichen is 95% mushroom or fungal mycelium, and a little bit of plant cells and bacteria, and it's like a little micro ecosystem. So if we can imagine billions of years ago, a lichen crashed onto the Earth, all the little ingredients for life were right there to start. But that's not the accepted idea. The thought is it sort of just happened randomly, and luckily fungi came early on.
Do we use mushrooms in any medical treatments?
In traditional forms of medicine, from Native Americans to traditional medicine from Japan and China and Africa, really all over the world, many cultures have long used many mushrooms for different types of healing purposes. Traditional medicine, just like you might use some herbs, have been traditionally used for hundreds of years to help with people's health. In modern medicine, there's some compounds, some chemicals that mushrooms and especially many molds produce that are very important in medicine. One of the most important is the compound that actually enables people to receive new organs. So like a heart transplant, a lot of people that receive a new heart or a new liver, their body will reject it. It wouldn't actually take for a long time. So they need to take this special compound that fungi produce.
We're talking with Peter McCoy. He is a mycologist, the founder of the only school for mycology in the world. This is the Children's Hour.
Consumers, and that is why they need to live near their food supply. Most are multicellular with cell chains called hyphae. mushrooms, and that is why they need to live near their food supply. Most are multicellular with cell chains called hyphae, which then all twist together in a mass called the mycelium. But they are consumers, and that is why they need to live near their food supply. Most are multicellular with cell chains called hyphae, which then all twist together in a mass called the mycelium. But they are consumers, and that is why.
Mushrooms by Sylvia Plath. Overnight, very whitely, discreetly, very quietly, our toes, our noses take hold on the loam, acquire the air. Nobody sees us, stops us, betrays us. The small grains make room. Soft fists insist on heaving the needles, the leafy bedding, even the paving. Our hammers are rams, earless and eyeless, perfectly voiceless, widen the crannies, shoulder through holes. We diet on water, on crumbs of shadow, bland-mannered, asking little or nothing. So many of us, so many of us. We are shelves, we are tables, we are meek, we are edible. Nudgers and shovers in spite of ourselves, our kind multiplies. We shall by morning inherit the earth, our foot's in the door.
Yeasts, molds, and mushrooms are not animals, plants, or bacteria, 'cause they belong in a separate kingdom that is known as fungi to some. They help us make medicine, beer, wine, and bread, and decompose stuff after it's dead. Yeast can ferment sugar for you to make alcohol and CO2. They may be small with only one cell, but they make beer and champagne as well. They help us make medicine, beer, wine, and bread, and decompose stuff after it's dead. Mold can be found wherever you've got food that is old and starting to rot. Some produce antibiotics that are good at killing bacteria. A mushroom is part of a fungus that's found, spread like a network of threads underground. Sometimes it pops up to release spores, and that is what a mushroom is for. They help us make medicine, beer, wine, and bread, and decompose stuff after it's dead. Truffles taste good and have a nice smell, recycling nutrients for us as well. They help us make medicine, beer, wine, and bread, and decompose stuff after we're dead.
From a CD called Basic Biology, that's Peter Weatherall with Fungi. And that release is about teaching children taxonomies of scientific words. Gentle Chase from Poddington Bear was behind the Sylvia Plath piece, and Bram Barker from Science Songs gave us that rap song about fungus and mushrooms and blue cheese, mold and yeast. You're listening to the Children's Hour, and with us on the show today is Peter McCoy. He is the founder of Mycologos, which is a school where you can get an accreditation in mycology, the only such place in the world, the first. And lots more questions from kids on the crew.
How do you know which mushrooms are poisonous?
There's no good way to know which mushroom is poisonous. And so you always want to be cautious with any mushroom. Now, you can touch a poisonous mushroom. You can look at it. You can dry it out and put it on your shelf and like the way that it looks. You just don't want to eat any mushroom that is poisonous. Even one mushroom that is sort of the most poisonous, just one mushroom could be enough to kill you. So there are really strong mushrooms out there. But there are more poisonous and deadly poisonous plants than there are deadly poisonous mushrooms. So, you know, we don't learn to be afraid of every plant. So we don't need to be afraid of every mushroom. And what's nice when you, if you start to learn how to identify edible mushrooms or just mushrooms you like to look at and want to know their names of, many of them are actually very easy to identify. Just like an apple, you know, once you know what an apple is, you know that it's different than an orange. And you, whenever you see an apple, you know that that's an apple and it's pretty simple. Something similar with mushrooms. Some of them are very easy. No matter where you are in the world, if you see it, there's nothing like it. And there's no confusion, nothing to worry about. But then there's lots of mushrooms that kind of look similar. They're confusing to me. And they can be quite hard to separate and make sure you have the right one and you named it just right. And so those are the mushrooms, you know, you learn later, or a lot of people just never learn them. They just stick with the easy ones. And there's a small number. We call them the foolproof because it's kind of like anybody could just learn them in an hour or two and what to look for. And as long as you make sure that the mushroom you pick, you know, has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these features and that's it, and there's no question, then you can be certain that you're fine and there's really no worry. When you get outside of that, if there's ever any question with your identity, then you just don't eat the mushroom.
You can't just pick the mushroom in your yard and eat it.
No.
Because you really have no idea. So you really do need an expert to teach you about identifying mushrooms.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Many mushrooms can make you very sick. A small number can kill you. That's the sort of extreme. But a lot of them can make you sick, make your stomach hurt, make you sick for several days. So you just never want to eat a mushroom that you haven't positively identified. And to really get to that level where you're certain, you're going to want an expert, somebody who's done it for many years to teach you. And then you're going to want to show them the mushroom, you know, many times. And really, there's a lot to make sure that you're really safe. But it is possible to learn it. Many people love mushroom hunting. I love mushroom hunting. It's another thing to do when I'm out in the woods and just walking on a hike. I'm also always mushroom hunting because, you know, you're just always looking at the mushrooms around you. And sometimes you get lucky and you find one. It takes time to learn it, but it is possible. And young people can do it. Older people can do it. So it's not something to be too afraid of or think is that difficult.
That's Peter McCoy. He is the founder of Mycologos, the world's first school of mycology. You can learn more about him and find our learning guide at childrenshour.org. Look for Fungus Among Us. There's a lot more to learn about mushrooms coming up, including their nutritional value. It's all coming up. Stick with us. This is the Children's Hour. We'll be right back. The Children's Hour is now producing weekly educational modules to go with every episode, thanks to a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. You can support this effort too. Go to childrenshour.org and click donate. The Children's Hour is grateful to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico, for hosting our recordings. Many thanks to New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and the National Endowment for the Arts for their support of the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is grateful to the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund for their support.
Hi, I love the Children's Hour because it's fun and you go to all sorts of different places. I'm Yoshi James from Australia.
Take the Children's Hour with you on your road trip. Find us at childrenshour.org or anywhere you listen to podcasts.